Blog Talk Radio.
Friday night is also a fun night. So sometimes you get us on Sunday, but sometimes you get us on Friday. So it's Friday Fun Day. Real Sports Talk Radio. Let's get this show rolling. Right now, I am Randy Zelia, Jose Padilla with me as always. I can't say as always, but okay, Jose Padilla is with me. Jose, good evening. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing quite well. How's everything?
I'm doing very well. If you'd like to join into the sports talk conversation with us tonight, the phone number here is 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. You can find us on Twitter at RZeliaBSP, as well as AngryJose15. Also, you can tweet us at @SportsPage. So we're all over the place as far as the Twitter world is concerned. Also, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/@SportsPage. Jose, lots of things going on. We have a jam-packed show. We're on for 2 hours tonight. Jam-packed show. I think we have too much show. I think we should save some of this show for another time. But I don't think we should because we have so much of it. It's a lot of fun to have. I think we're very lucky, and we're going to have a good time tonight. How are you doing tonight?
I'm going great, but I think you're going crazy. You're absolutely losing it. The show hasn't barely even been on.
Okay, first off, this is not coming from the man. And yes, I'm going to go here early. This is coming from the man who's sitting there playing video games while we're prepping for a show. So
it just shows my loyalty to the show.
Him telling me, okay, and we're getting right into this early. Again, 760-283-0846. If you want to yell at me or yell at him, please yell at him, as this is really one of the tougher moments that I've ever had, you know, live on the show with him, where we have to be subjected to NBA 2K13 before he goes on the air. Not like an hour before showtime, or like with a minute and a half before showtime. Oh, leave him a game of applause. Really? Really? Show some professionalism. The professionalism. Anyway,
I'm as professional as my paycheck demands it to be, so.
I have nowhere to go with that. So anyway, I'm just trying to figure out where exactly to go. Anyway, so we are live. It's Friday night. We had some circumstances which are moving us from Sunday to Friday this week. I appreciate everyone who's tuning and listening. We have a really big show today. Andy McCullough from NJ.com and Star Ledger here in Jersey will be joining us to talk Major League Baseball in about 15 minutes. Later on tonight, we'll be talking NFL with Yahoo Sports writer Jason Cole. We'll be breaking down the playoff games as well as the coaching corral in the NFL. Later on in the night, we'll have Charles Curtis from NJ.com to talk a little NHL hockey, New York Rangers hockey with us. And we're going to jump a little NBA, a little bowl championship game from Monday night as well. But Jose, I want to start with this. And before we jump into Major League Baseball with the steroid testing and the HGH testing, which, by the way, Andy broke the story for, so we're lucky to have him on with us today. I have to ask this question. Were you surprised that the Hall of Fame, the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, did not have anybody get in this year?
I'm not surprised because it kind of prepared us. I mean, it seemed like every writer that was on radio, on TV talking about this pretty much let it be known that there was a really good possibility that it was going to happen. I will say this. I think it's a real travesty that it happened. Not because I don't necessarily think it's wrong that no one gets in, but the reason behind why no one got in this year, I think it's just a joke. We have too many people trying to play caretaker to the game. And where were these people when everything was going down in the 90s? Where was your morality then? I mean, so I'm a little ashamed at everything that's gone on.
Can I tell you something? As watching a watching baseball for as much as I have, and I'm not a diehard baseball fan, but I've watched it enough, and I've seen majority of these guys play. I was a little surprised when looking at the list of seeing guys who got votes who were never tied to this. Was Larry Walker tied to this? Was Edgar Martinez, which, by the way, I don't think either of these two guys should be Hall of Famers. But they're, you know, they're on the
ballot. That's interesting. I could make a case for both of them, but go on.
I'm saying, all right, well, I'm saying, when you look at these guys, let's take Bonds, Clemens, Sammy Sosa. Now, you know, take some of these guys out of the equation. I'm talking about some of these lovely guys who you can make arguments for. Are you? I'll pull up the list in a second.
All right. Well, why don't we hit on the big one while you're talking about it as far as the local scene goes. Let's talk about Mike Piazza.
Again, are we okay with this?
I'm not. He deserves to be in. I mean, the guy is possibly the greatest hitting catcher of all time. I don't understand how you can make him wait. You know, because, as you know, there's some people who take this vote so seriously that they don't feel that people should get in on their first time. As you may or may not know, the highest percentage of vote ever received by any individual player was Tom Seaver, and even he didn't get a perfect vote. And
right,
back then, the reasoning was some of the writers said flat out, well, I don't believe someone should get in on their first ballot. I mean, how ludicrous is that?
All right, I'm going to go through the list. Do you want me to start from the highest percentage or the lowest percentage? And we'll go up or down, your choice.
We'll start from the highest.
Okay. Craig Biggio, 68%. Craig Biggio, Hall of Famer, yes or no?
Yes. Yes, he's a Hall of Famer.
Okay. Jack Morris, yes or no? 67%.
I say yes.
Okay. By the way, for Biggio, I'm going to say I'm indifferent, leaning towards the yes. Morris, I'm going to lean towards the no. Jeff Bagwell?
No, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
Okay, neither do I. That's one of those guys. I think there's more to him than there was. You know what I mean?
Is he that high percentage-wise on the list?
Yeah. He had Jeff Bagwell at 59% of the votes for this list. Yeah,
I am shocked that he had that much. All right, but let's move on. We shouldn't take too much time on this, so let's move on.
Well, yeah, because we're going to get into this. Again, Andy McCullough, 7:45 to talk.
Yeah, that's
about
why I don't want to spend too much time on this. We could do it more there, but let's do this yes or no real fast.
Let's do yes or no real quick. Okay, Mike Piazza.
Oh, most certainly he deserves to be a Hall of Famer.
Okay, I'd say yes as well. Best hitting catcher of all time, fielding, there's more to that. Tim Raines.
Tim Raines, no. I'm not so sure that he's a Hall of Famer.
Lee Smith.
No.
Curt Schilling.
You know, that's an interesting one. If I have to think about it, then it's no. But he's an interesting one because he's got a lot on his resume.
Okay. Roger Clemens.
Obviously he is, but there's other issues involved with that.
And I have some questions for Andy about Roger Clemens, but Barry Bonds.
Again, he obviously is, but other issues involving him.
Edgar Martinez.
You know, you say no. I actually think he does deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. He might be the purest hitter we've seen in our time. If you've never seen him play extensively, the guy was just clutch.
He was a DH for a majority of his better years.
Understandable, but most guys don't get into the Hall of Fame because of their defense anyway.
I say 50-50 to me, leaning towards no for this year anyway. Alan Trammell.
You know, I did not even realize he wasn't in the Hall of Fame yet. I could have sworn he was. I'm going to say no, though, because I think there's just so many. I think his position has gotten better. He might get lost in the shuffle.
Okay, Larry Walker.
I say, you know what, I lean more towards yes, but I wouldn't shed a tear if he never got in. But he was a good player. He was an outstanding player, really, more than just good. So I would say yeah for me, but I could see if he didn't get in.
Fred McGriff.
You know, he's another one. He's like Larry Walker, outstanding player, but maybe someone who doesn't get in.
Okay, well, here's by the way, here's the funny part, McGriff. 20.7% of the votes. 20.7%. Dale Murphy.
You know, I think I've heard people say he's going to get in at some point. I don't see it. He was on too many bad Atlanta Braves teams. When you're the best player on a bad team, that doesn't necessarily mean much. So I'm going to say no on him.
Mark McGwire.
You're going to think I'm crazy on this? I'm going to say no. Because I don't think just hitting home runs is a prerequisite for getting into the Hall of Fame.
Don Mattingly.
I say yes, but he'll never get in.
Sammy Sosa.
He's in the Bonds Clemens issue, so.
Rafael Palmeiro.
He would have been in if it wasn't for these issues, so he would have been a Hall of Famer.
Okay, Bernie Williams.
I love Bernie, but he's never getting in the Hall of Fame, and that's a shame.
Kenny Lofton?
No.
Sandy Alomar Jr.
No.
I never said this was going to be easy.
Yeah, I had to think about that for a second, but I'm gonna say no.
Okay, I think again these are all fair. Guido Franco.
Nah.
David Wells.
I don't think David Wells will ever get into the Hall of Fame.
Steve Finley.
No.
Sean Green.
No.
I
think we should stop at that point. I think once we start getting to the Sean Green section, we could probably stop.
I am not disagreeing with you on that. Before we have our
first guest, though, but Randy, let's me and you talk about this. Are you okay with what happened? Like, are you fine with this?
No. Especially now. We live in an era where we're constantly waiting. You know, we constantly want to reward greatness. We're looking for those people to look up to. I know we're in the steroid era. I know we're in the, you know, guilty till proven innocent era. Is that the best way of saying it?
I think you're right.
I think that's where we are. And we'll ask Andy McCullough from NJ.com in a few seconds. We'll ask Andy how he feels about this topic. In fact, let's welcome Andy in now.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press.
Still waiting, Andy. To answer your question, Jose, I'm not sure on whether we should be rewarding these guys for cheating. But we have to remind ourselves that we're doing this. These guys like McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, all of these guys who are on this list for the Hall of Fame, majority of them, were taking these drugs, or allegedly taking these performance-enhancing drugs, before it became illegal in baseball. Now, people can make the comment of, you know, big deal, you know, like, you know, cheating whether it's legal or not. But before Major League Baseball said steroids are not welcome in this game, or before they actually had a testing policy where they can start penalizing people, this and that, before you put that in place, these guys were taking it. So technically, they really weren't breaking the rule too much.
I understand that portion, but let's say this too, though. It's not like steroids were technically legal. I mean, I don't know if steroids are one of those things where it's a state-by-state sort of thing, but it's not one of those things that you're supposed to be taking anyway. You need a prescription, honestly, to take it. Otherwise, I think it's illegal to use it in, you know, any form whatsoever, so even if it wasn't necessarily something that was in baseball rules or, you know, etiquette, whatever you want to call it, I don't believe servers are legal anyway. So anyone who wants to use that excuse is kind of barking up the wrong tree, in my opinion.
Again, during the home run race between McGuire and Sammy Sosa, I'm asking you right now, was there steroid testing at that point?
Not in baseball, no. No.
Okay,
but
let's welcome in Andy McCullough from NJ.com. How are you, my friend? Hello, Andy, are you with
us? If you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen.
We keep having these technical problems. They're killing me. Jose, I'm firmly believe, listen, they did not have this testing in place. Okay? They did not have it in place. My attitude is, it was still legal when they were doing it. I know that's not what you want to hear. That's not what anybody wants to hear.
But is it
right
legal?
Now.
I mean, you know, is it legal? It's technically against the law, you know, to do steroids. I mean, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But I mean, don't you need a prescription to take steroids otherwise legally?
Again, here's my argument. And again, you tell me where in my argument I'm wrong. Okay? Are you telling me that we should penalize people? Like when Palmeiro came out and said to Congress, I did not take steroids, I did not take any performance enhancing drugs, and then 2 weeks later fail a test. Okay. That's stupid. You'll never see Palmeiro in the Hall of Fame. You're never gonna see him. It's over. That's done.
Yeah.
I understand that because the testing policy was already in place. But when you tell me McGuire, Sosa, when A-Rod, that one report where A-Rod and David Ortiz and other players were on that list, which, by the way, we still haven't gotten all the names off of that list yet of how many players were testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs and steroids, okay? So we haven't got the full list of that yet, but take this for what it's worth, Jose. And you, again, fight me if I'm wrong. So you're telling me we have the right to penalize these guys?
No, I don't feel that way at all. What I am saying, though, is I don't feel at the same time, I don't think these guys should be penalized for that. What I am saying, though, is that while it may have not been in baseball rules that these things were illegal or against the rules, let's just say against the rules, it may have not been in baseball law, I still believe that taking steroids, though, was illegal even then. I'm sure now there's even more stringent policies because they have testing for it. But I believe that taking steroids without a prescription back then was illegal. So all I'm saying is that I don't want to hear people, like, say, you know, ignorance on this, like, oh, we didn't know, because there were laws about this. It's just that in baseball, there wasn't a specific rule. But that's like if you do drugs. I mean, there's probably not a rule that says point blank you can't smoke crack while you're playing baseball. But you know it's wrong.
I understand what you're saying. I am fully understanding of what your point is. My point is this. We shouldn't be punishing these guys for doing something or not doing something when it technically at the time wasn't banned from the sport.
No, I agree with that. I totally understand what you're saying. I agree with that. I don't take issue with. I do understand that. But, again, though, let's not defend the issues that came up. Like, let's not give people a free pass at the same time. You know, let's not say that ignorance takes into effect here, because we all know it was wrong. But I agree. We shouldn't be punishing people, but mainly because everyone benefited from their cheating. Any way you want to slice it.
Okay, I'm going to throw something else at you. And We just heard from Andy McCullough. Andy just was tied up a little late, finishing up a call. He'll be on with us in a minute. Jose, I'm going to be honest with you when I say this. I don't think you can. I don't think you can tell lies to these guys.
Well,
I don't think you can. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right. And I don't think we should. And like when Andy comes on too, well, I'm gonna fight this part of it. And now that they're doing HGH, now they're gonna have a special blood test for HGH tests. Oh man, you're gonna have guys leading the league in home runs with 25 home runs a year. I'm telling you right now.
It's, you know what? It's possible. We still have to see it, but I will say this: there's gonna be a lot of people that will be coming up pretty soon. When these Hall of Fame conversations are happening in the upcoming years. And I'm going to be very interested to see how the voting will take place. My major gripe with all this is that I think the people that vote for this are too high on themselves. And I think that's the major issue that I have
with
it.
That's another part of the conversation. Before we jump into the writers, whether they're right or wrong, and this is a topic that we could probably spend the full 2 hours on, which we're not going to. This is a part of the topic, which is true. But I want to finish off just on the criteria and you know what we're really looking at here. In this situation, can we penalize? Should we be penalizing the players because like the great accomplishments that Roger Clemens has? The great accomplishments that Rafael Palmeiro has with 3,000 hits. Remember how they always said 3,000 hits guaranteed you a spot in the Hall of Fame. He's not getting in. Going into the Hall of Fame
is not a right. It's a privilege. So there's no guarantee of anything. You know, just because you have the numbers to back it up, you know, if certain situations come up and people who have, you know, mortality in their hands can easily just take it away. So, again, whether it's right or not, that's another topic, but they're going to do it. And whether we agree with it or not, they're going to do it.
I understand what you're saying. Again, it's such a tough argument, and I mean this with all due respect to you, and I mean this with all due respect to all baseball writers and baseball novelists. I have a hard time with how this whole process has been played out.
Listen, I agree with you in that premise. I really do. I don't like how this is happening either. What I'm trying to say, and I'm probably not saying it eloquently enough, is that there's a point that I do understand why these writers are doing what they're doing. I just don't know if these are the people that should be doing it. I guess that's what I'm really just trying to say. I don't know if we have the right people determining who gets in and who doesn't. And
well,
maybe that's my bigger issue with it.
Jose, let's welcome Andy McCullough from NJ.com into the conversation. Andy, how are you tonight, my friend?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Andy, what's
thank
up?
Thank you for taking a few minutes to join us tonight. We have a couple things we wanted to talk with you about.
Sure.
Before we jump into, you did a great job of covering the story about the blood tests with HGH. I was reading your work this morning on NJ.com. Before we do that, I want to go a little back earlier in the week with the Hall of Fame, and this has pretty much dominated the conversation for the first 20 minutes of the show. As a writer who covers Major League Baseball, do you think this is really the right situation, what's going on as far as nobody getting into the Hall of Fame this year?
I mean, personally, for one, just a couple things up front. I don't have a ballot. I've only been in the BBWA for 4 years, so you need 10 years to get a ballot. If I had a ballot, I would have voted for about 10 players, with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Jeff Bagwell and Mike Piazza at the top. Do I think it's a bad thing that those guys didn't get in? Yeah, sure, because I think they're Hall of Famers. I think eventually they will get in. It's just unfortunate they didn't do it in the first year. But I guess the larger question is, you know, is kind of the result a bad thing for baseball? And I think definitely in the short term it doesn't look good. I think no one was really excited about kind of the result in which, you know, no one gets in and there's going to be the only living recipient, you know, of a Hall of Fame entry, or the only person getting in is going to be Paul Hagan, the longtime baseball writer from the Philadelphia Daily News. I know he's not too pleased about being the only guy there. But, you know, it sort of caused a referendum on the process. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's, there's some flaws in it. I think it's, you know, that the guys like Vin Scully and these long-term broadcasters, you know, don't get votes. And, you know, I think that's, you know, maybe that's unfair. But I think, you know, it, as tough as it is for some people to accept, I think the voting results kind of reflect how people around the country feel. You know, if you talk to 10 baseball fans and ask them if Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame, I would say it's probably 50-50. You know, I think, you know, baseball fans in general are split on it. So I totally understand, you know, people being upset that there's no one getting in. I think, you know, it's a shame that Jeff Bagwell's had to wait 3 years. I think Jeff Bagwell is one of the three, or the five best first basemen of all time, you know. But I think it's just a matter of, but then again, you know, if you ask any random baseball fan, hey, how good do you think Jeff Bagwell was? They'll say, yeah, he was pretty good, I guess, you know. So do I think the baseball writers should do better? Yes, I think they should be better educated on some of the newer statistics that kind of show, you know, how good some of these players are, like Tim Raines and Jeff Bagwell and all that. But do I think it sort of causes a crisis? No, not particularly. I think there's going to be Hall of Famers next year. Biggio is going to get in. Jack Morris will probably finally get over the hump. And, you know, you're going to see Piazza will probably make a good run, too, and Bagwell as well. So I think it's just a one-year blip that certainly looks bad for the BBWAA, and it certainly looks bad for the Hall of Fame, but I don't know if it's a full-fledged crisis.
Hey, Andy, real fast, not to get sidetracked on this, but are you a believer of the sabermetrics?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. I'm, yeah, I think there it's an important part of covering the game. I think it's, you know, you can argue with whether or not, you know, it's something you learned as a kid, but there's a, it's basically, I look at it as I cover a field, you know, not a literal field, but like a field of baseball, so to speak, and this is kind of part of it, and so I have to know how this stuff works, and I happen to think it's pretty useful in terms of evaluating players.
And especially with this list for this year's crop, you know, you had Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Larry Walker. You know, you have all these guys. Next year, you have Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, and Frank Thomas joining the vote.
Yep.
There's a really good possibility that guys like Bonds and Clemens are going to have to really wait a couple of years to get on. But both guys so far really haven't been, I guess, proven guilty of taking any. So is in this situation, guys who have these historic numbers possibly not getting in, is this, I don't want to keep using the word fair, but these two guys were involved with high-profile cases in Washington about this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is with this, are these guys going to be shut out for the next couple of years because you do have guys like Maddux and Glavine and Thomas who really have no proof against them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely going to have to wait a few years. And, you know, I'm sure Maddux will get in pretty easily, and I guess Glavine, too, since he didn't throw hard. So he's, you know, if you didn't throw hard, if you didn't hit a lot of home runs, I mean, you're basically totally immune from, you know, steroid talk. So, yeah, I mean, obviously Bonds and Clemens are going to have to wait, but I think really the poster child for the guy who's been victimized by this is Mark McGwire. Mark McGwire is absolutely a Hall of Famer. You know, Mark McGwire is, you know, I think 580 home runs. You know, his career OPS was like 980, you know, with a 160 OPS plus. I mean, he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer to me, but he's basically paying for the sins of using steroids and admitting to it. And he'll probably never get in. His number basically stays stagnant every year. You know, it's not, he's not the sort of guy who I think there's a lot of voters who really do feel like Bonds and Clemens are Hall of Famers. They just don't want them in the Hall of Fame just yet. And I think when push comes to shove, as the years go on, people will eventually relent and say, okay, yeah, you know what? These guys are Hall of Famers. You know, and everyone knows they are. No, there's no argument. Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player of all time, and that's not to change, you know, 10 years from now. He'll still be the best baseball player ever. And I think the voters understand that. There's going to be more and more voters coming in, too, who probably feel that way. Will they have to wait a few years? I think so. But I think the real sort of guy who's going to be victimized by all this is McGuire.
You know, I have to say, I was just actually telling Randy before, I actually am not a pro-McGuire guy when it comes to the Hall of Fame. I know you just spit all those numbers out, but to me, he's just basically a guy that hit a lot of home runs. There's nothing else about him that really sticks out to me.
Well, you know, he got on base probably 40% of the time, and he had a 980 OPS. He was, you know, again, a 160 OPS plus. I mean, that's elite, elite, elite. That's basically what Miguel Cabrera did this year, and he did that every year of his career, in essence. So he did a lot more than hit home runs. He got on base a ton. He hit a lot of doubles. He was a really great hitter.
I have to ask this question, too. Do you think guys like McGuire, Clemens, especially the guys on this year's ballot who are getting victimized, and guys like A-Rod and David Ortiz, are we being too difficult on them? Are we being tough on them? Because they were accused of taking these performance-enhancing drugs or tested positive in an era or at a time where it wasn't illegal in baseball. Should we be penalizing them at this point in time?
I think they're going to be penalized. Ortiz, I think, is a borderline, at best, Hall of Fame guy anyway. But I think, you know, Alex Rodriguez is definitely going to have to go through a similar process to what Bonds and Clemens go through now. I think these guys are going to be like a test case for him. I think, you know, if you were going to sort of give them the Palmeiro treatment, basically saying, well, you know, Palmeiro actually failed a test, unlike everyone else, these guys would be viewed under a harsher light because they Ortiz, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he ever failed a test when there was a penalty attached. I think he was just attached to the he was in the anonymous list. But Alex Rodriguez did fail a test, so, yeah, he probably should be given a harsher penalty than someone like, you know, Bonds and Clemens, who never failed a test. They just, you know, were involved in court cases.
Okay, Andy, also, how does this new HGH testing fit into what's going on with as far as the regular drug testing?
The technical aspect of it, or like the more philosophical thing for what it means?
For the more philosophical thing for what it means.
I think what you're seeing is, you know, the players have been the players who are in the leadership positions in the union are tired of sort of the questions of drugs in the game. You know, they dislike sort of the perception that was created by the steroid era, that all these guys are sort of cheating. And so they're doing whatever they can, essentially, to strengthen the drug policy so that they look stronger and so that they, you know, they can show that, you know, hey, we have a tougher drug policy in the NFL than the NHL, the NBA. And that's sort of a direct effect from, the image created by the steroid era.
Andy, moving on to a more positive thing. obviously, I'm actually a huge Mets fan, and I'm curious, what are your thoughts on
that.
This team, especially with Travis Dennard coming aboard now on the Zicky trade?
I think they're going to be a 70-win team, 75 maybe at best. There's still a lot of holes. They still need a fifth starter. They still need to improve the outfield. It's going to be another sort of year of a holding pattern of waiting to sort of get, you know, these guys like Zach Wheeler and Darno up to the majors, and that's probably not going to be till midsummer. So, you know, I think the Dickey trade was big for them in terms of, you know, getting some frontline talent. I mean, Darno could be the answer at catcher, the guy they've been looking for since Piazza left. So I think there's reasons for optimism, just no reason, or not no reason, but there's not going to be much reason to be optimistic about this season. But long term, I think it's been a very good offseason in terms of, you know, rebuilding the franchise.
It's been very quiet from Mets camp. Are we hearing anything right now as far as more improvements to the team? And also, how is the effect with the ownership, with the money they owe in the Madoff scandal, how is that affecting the baseball operations aspect of everything?
They insist that the money has no, that doesn't really have an impact on what they're doing. And, obviously if they had more money, they'd be willing to spend it. But I think they're waiting till 2014 when Jason Bay's contract with Volkovitz off the books and Johan Santana's off the books before they'll make a splash. They've been talking, fairly confidently about they're going to make a sizable sort of foray into the free agent market next winter. As of right now, they've had some discussions with Arizona about Justin Upton, but that's a very, Arizona's asking for a lot, understandably, and I believe sort of any offer that the Mets would make would have to start with either Matt Harvey or Zach Wheeler, and that's pretty much a non-starter for the Mets. So, they're looking at guys like Scott Hairston for the outfield. They're looking at pitchers like Carl Pavano and Sean Markham and Chris Young, and so, there's not a ton to look forward to again for this year, but I think long term they might be set up to do something next offseason.
You think we'll see Zach Wheeler up this year?
I'm sorry?
You think we'll see Wheeler up this year?
Yeah, he should be there by midsummer. If it all goes well, they would like to see him sort of come up on the same sort of trajectory that Harvey did. Maybe come up in August. It could be earlier than that. Wheeler, it's probably going to be a better pitcher than Harvey, and they're very, very excited about him, but they also don't want to rush him. So I think you'll definitely see him barring an arm injury.
All right, I have to ask this question from a media member to another media member. I do a lot more coverage in the NBA than I do Major League Baseball, but since you've been to a lot of the stadiums, who's got the best food in the media room?
The Phillies do. Phillies have the best bread. The Phillies have outstanding food.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They have Turkey Hill ice cream, which is a real sort of pleasure, and they just have good food. It's not anything really exotic. It's just they have a good salad bar. I mean, really, all you're looking for is a good salad bar and edible entrees, and they go a little bit better than that in both regards. So I think they're pretty clearly number one.
And A lot of media members I talked to also love the Cardinals. They said some of the food out there is very good, too.
I've heard mixed reviews on that, but yeah.
I like our show, Randy, because you get everything from us.
You really get like a good mix from us. And I guess the final question I also really have, as far as baseball season, do you think that the overall, both American League the American League situation just around the league, has the power shifted away from the Yankees now? It looks like that the Los Angeles Angels and Anaheim have seemed to have done a lot more spending than everybody else this summer. You know where I'm going with this, so yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, no, I think the Yankees are definitely, it's an interesting time, I think, for the Yankees in which they're really forced to cut back for the first time in forever. It feels like where they kind of can't get everyone they want and they have to sort of have a budget. It's happening at a time when money throughout the game is exploding. And so you have this odd situation in which every team, or not every team, but a lot of teams have money. And all of a sudden, the one team that was always expected to have the most money is, like, nowhere to be found. The Yankees have no interest in Josh Hamilton and none in Zach Greinke and, all these big money guys that they normally would be talking to. They're non-starters. So what you've seen is kind of, like you said, the two Los Angeles teams, especially the Dodgers, who, have just been throwing around money like crazy, fill that vacuum. And so it'll be interesting to see, once the Yankees get under 189, as they've said a thousand times for 2014, and avoid that sort of luxury tax that will cost them so much money, by that offseason, they'll be back in it. And it'll be interesting to see, if they, perhaps, I could see them missing the playoffs this year, and, perhaps again in 2014, if they can't make sort of tangible improvements, they could sort of go into another off-season where they spent all that money like they did going into 09, like with A-Rod, or not with A-Rod, with Teixeira and Burnett and Sabathia. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how this all plays out, because that's kind of what it's setting up for at this point.
Well, isn't it, though, where a lot of the players don't want to come to New York, and the Yankees would almost have to sort of overpay to get some of these guys? Because the exposure of being in New York, you know, you were seeing as many high-profile failures as we have seen success stories by coming to the Yankees.
I think that's a little overblown. I think guys will go whoever pays them the most. We saw that with Greinke. Greinke, it made a ton of sense for him to go to Texas, and the Dodgers just offered more. You know, the Texas has a better team. Texas has a better chance of contending. The Dodgers just gave him more money. In general, these guys go where the most money is. So I think, you know, yes, do they have to overpay? Sure, but they have to overpay because they have to overpay because the Dodgers exist, not because players don't want to play in New York. And they've also gotten to the point where, in terms of their baseball operations, they know guys who, you know, might not fit well, and they don't really target them. I mean, that's one reason why they weren't in on Greinke, which I think Greinke would be fine in New York, but the Yankees don't really think that way. So, and they know a ton more about baseball than I do. So, you know, that's just kind of their organizational philosophy, is they understand the kind of guys who can handle it there. And those are the guys they're going after to begin with.
We have Andy McCullough from NJ.com, the Star Ledger. Andy, thanks for taking a few minutes tonight. It's Friday night. I know you want to go out and party. I know you really have to, you know, the baseball guys don't really have to do too much now until pitchers and catchers, but I know you're going to be down in Florida. You're going to be busy. Thank you for a few minutes.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Take care, Andy.
All right, bye-bye.
That was Andy McCullough from NJ.com. Jose, a lot to react to from this. I kept him on a couple extra seconds because I wanted to ask him about, you know, the Yankees and the situation there. I do agree with him. I think it's a little weird for the Yankees not to have their hand in everything that's sort of going on right now. I'm sort of believed at this point we are now seeing the end of that era. Remember that era you were talking about a couple months back, because I listened to some old shows and we were talking about this on the air. We're at a point where the Yankees are no longer going to be, you know, we're not going to have it every single year the Yankees are in the playoffs. You know, like there was a time where the Yankees were never in the playoffs. And then since 1994, 95, they've been there. So with the exception of the 1 year in 2008. So, Jose, I ask you, are we now going to be seeing the New York Yankees not in the playoffs?
It might be a situation where it won't be as a shock as it has been in the past, like, 15 years. But, yeah, like, we did discuss this. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, George Steinbrenner passed away, and now his sons are running the show. And these guys are probably not into it as much as their dad was. And you can tell, because there would never be talk of trying to get under a luxury tax when George was around. So, you know, yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of a hard time for the Yankee. And I think the Yankee fan that's been living it up is going to have a hard time dealing with it. But as I always kind of tell you, most of the Yankee fans that they have now are kind of front-runner Yankee fans, and I don't mind saying that. There's very few true hardcore Yankee fans out there right now, so maybe no one will even notice.
Well, it's like I said, the outspending by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I used to say, I'll just say the Angels from now on. Make my life a lot easier. The spending by the Angels, really, like, it was Yankee-like. I know, we're putting it at that point. It was Yankee-like spending. The way they bought in Josh Hamilton. You know, you have to make sure these guys fit, too. You know, the personalities in the clubhouse, there has to be some camaraderie. You know, for me, I felt at times that the Yankees looked like they just weren't really into it over the last couple of years. I know that's hard for someone to say, because you want to be ready for your job. You almost feel like there's times you see the Yankees are putting maximum effort out there, and there's other times you feel like they're not. And it sort of bothered me at times watching it. But you know, you're a Mets fan, so you're used to
you know what, though? Getting back into that whole, sometimes they look like they're playing outstanding, sometimes they're not. I think the one thing we all seem to forget, and obviously because we live in this area, we're used to seeing more, you know, great performances than not. You know, the other team gets paid to play, too. And I think we forget that. I think we just assume that, our team is always going to do well. Our team is always going to be, you know, out there, you know, busting ass and taking names. But, you know, look, there's another team out there playing against them, and sometimes they're going to be better, sometimes they're going to be a lot better. So I think that we lose sight of that sometimes.
I do. I agree with you 110%. The other things that we talked about with Andy West was the Hall of Fame and, you know, the Glavin, Maddox, and Frank Thomas could all going to be on the ballot next year. I think it does hurt the chances of guys like McGuire, Sosa, you know, those guys who have been on there this year couldn't even get in. You know, I also think it's going to hurt Piazza. I know you're a big Mets fan. I know a lot of Mets fans who are pushing for Mike Piazza to get in the Hall of Fame this year. And it's going to be very difficult, I think.
I'll say this. I was never a real big Piazza fan. I'll be honest with you. I was always in that Todd Hundley mode, and it took a long time for me to really embrace Mike. But I will say this, though. I don't think he's going to have a hard time getting in. I think he's going to get in eventually, and it's not going to have anything to do with people waiting on first ballots and anything like that. I think Bill Maddon pretty much echoed it, and I don't agree with this, but these guys are just basically waiting for someone to either break out something on Piazza or for everyone to just say, you know what, we can't find anything, so let's vote him in. Because I really think that's the craziness of it all, is that these guys are waiting for someone to say something. You've had 5 years to find something on all these athletes. If you didn't find it then, what makes you think you're going to find it now?
I agree. I think he felt I was a little extreme with the whole steroid, you know, guys being penalized because of it type of attitude that I sort of had. So I know he thought I was a little extreme on it, and I understand, but I think I had to go a little extreme on it to prove a point. anyways, we're going to move over to the NFL in a couple of seconds. We're gonna welcome Jason Cole on from Yahoo Sports. We're gonna try and get Jason on with us tonight, and we're gonna discuss we'll talk about the NFL Hall of Fame as well. And before we jump into it, Jose, I want to get your general feeling of the NFL Hall of Fame, the ballot this year, people who are eligible, of what you think of the guys, of the possibilities.
You know, I wonder sometimes, like, I mean, I think first of all, as you know, I think only six guys can get in any 1 year. I think that's the most.
Five.
Is it five? Okay.
It is five.
I actually am okay with this particular set. I know for certain that Michael Strahan is on here. Bill Parcells, who somehow still has not gotten to the Hall of Fame, is on here. I like this list. I'm curious if Chris Carter is going to get in. I don't know if you ever heard my opinion on this, but part of me feels that the reason why Chris Carter is still not in is that he still has never shown any sort of contrition with his attitude towards the people that vote for this. And Shannon Sharp, I think, learned his lesson, and that's why they got him in. So I'm curious if he's going to get in this year, because I think for the last 4 or 5 years, Chris Carter has been the definite get-in no matter what, and yet he's still on this, has not been in their list. So I'm curious about that.
I also think that, of course, Chris Carter is also a very outspoken person, too. Here, let's go over the list, okay?
All right.
Okay, Larry Allen.
You know, I don't think he would get in. Not this year, anyway.
To Larry Allen?
Yeah. I think he would have to wait.
Jerome Pettis.
You know, I'm not a fan. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he was a great player. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
I mean, they also passed up Marshall Faulk for Jerome Pettis on this thing, which is, to me, is a little... No, it's like, all right, I'm not sure if I fully agree with that one. So you have Jerome Bettis, Tim Brown.
I think Tim Brown's a Hall of Famer.
Okay. We're talking about Chris Carter.
You know, I'm not sure. Statistically, he's a Hall of Famer, but I've heard people tell me that even statistically, he's not necessarily a Hall of Famer. So I don't know. He rubs rubs me the wrong way, so I actually don't care if he gets in or not.
Curly Culp.
I have no idea who that is.
Okay. Edward DiPartolo Jr., he's an owner that's on the ballot.
Yeah, he should be in. He should get in.
Okay. Kevin Green.
No.
Charles Haley.
I think Charles Haley should get in.
Art Modell.
No.
I think Art Modell will always be remembered as the person who broke Cleveland's heart.
Yes.
Jonathan Ogden.
Not this year.
Okay. Bill Parcells.
He's got to get in. He should have been in last year.
Okay. Andre Reed.
No.
Will Shields.
I think Will Shields should get in.
Michael Strahan.
I believe Michael Strahan should get in.
And Enos Williams.
He was a great corner. I don't know if he's going to get in.
Okay, no, again, these are all fair. Okay, so out of that
list. I think
you're
missing one, dude.
What?
You're missing one.
Who am I missing?
You're missing Warren Sapp.
Warren Sapp, yeah, he's not on this list.
No, my list.
I'm looking at who gets a vote for the Football Hall of Fame, and I'm looking at this courtesy of our friends over at ESPN.com. They did not put Warren Sapp on that list, so I do apologize for that. So if you got to give me five, who are you putting in?
I'll give you five right now. I'm going to say Tim Brown, DiBartolo Jr., Strahan, Will Shields, Parcells. I don't think there's another guy that's really deserving, so that would be my five. That would be my five right there.
Okay, I'm going to go Sapp. Carter, Parcells, Edward DiBartolo Jr., and Ogden.
No love for Strahan this year?
I don't think so.
He is good with the media, and that plays a big role in this.
Okay, so with that being said, are you okay with I know you have a problem with my list. I know you do, so it's okay. You have a problem with my list?
It's all subjective, you know, because really, there's no criteria for this. I mean, if you think about it, if there was any kind of real criteria other than how we think about people, Bill Parcells would have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. So I guess it really just depends on who's voting.
760-283-0846. Come in and call in and join in the conversation about the NFL Hall of Fame. We're going to be joined by Jason Cole in a few minutes. We're going to try and get Jason on the line with us so we can discuss a little bit of NFL football. We still have our picks. We're going to hear from Jason, who's in San Francisco right now. And Jason's going to be covering the Packers-San Francisco game for Yahoo Sports. We're going to see if we can get him on the line with us. And Jose, you know, we're getting into football, and let's put the pick six behind us for a few minutes. We did this with a lot of fun. You know, to a point, like, we even joked around that we sort of stopped counting for a little bit. The NFL season is always like a marathon. It's not a sprint. And it just seems like now we're going to see what the Patriots are really all about. We're going to see what the 49ers are about. We're really going to see some of these teams. Who do you like this upcoming week?
You know, I'm going to say this, and you're going to probably call me a shyster, but I just have a funny feeling Seattle's doing something. I can't explain it, but there's just something about them. And I've had no love for Atlanta all year, so why start now? I mean, so I'm going to say Seattle. San Francisco, I'm going with because they're my team to make it to the Super Bowl this year. I just love their defense. I think they're the one. I think them and Denver are the two most balanced teams left in the playoffs. And then the AFC, I'm going to take Denver and New England. You know, because basically Houston is pretty much the Atlanta of the AFC. All talk, no substance.
Yeah, I haven't been shocked. I have not been surprised that the general public has been against. The general public has been against the Atlanta Falcons. I have not picked on people who are really on their bandwagon besides their fan base. But I also believe that the Falcons haven't given us a reason to believe in them. You know, last year, getting destroyed by the Giants, and the last time they were in the playoffs the year before, they got beaten up by the Green Bay Packers. I hate to say it, but give me a reason to believe, Atlanta. Give me a reason to believe.
Yeah. Well, you probably won't find one that, you know, you or I could see. I'm sure people in Atlanta will give you many reasons. It's just something about them. I just don't know. To me, it's like the record is impressive, but is there anything to it? Is there any real substance to it? I know they beat the hell out of the Giants, and you know, but at that point, I think the Giants season was already done. So I just don't know. And to me, if that's your biggest win of the year, I mean, what did you accomplish then?
I agree. Let's ask Jason Cole from Yahoo Sports. Jason, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm good.
Hey, Jason,
how are you?
Good, Jason. Yep. Thanks for taking a few minutes coming on the air with us. Jason Cole from Yahoo Sports. Jason, we're talking about the playoff picture right now, and I want to get your perspective of being around the NFL all the time. Is it me, or is there just not a lot of belief with Atlanta right now?
Well, yeah, because it's developed over 5 years that they haven't won a game. Now, if people lose track of the perspective that they've always lost to the NFC, the team that went to the Super Bowl, including Green Bay when they won the championship, and the Giants last year when they won the championship. So you kind of lose track of, okay, they're losing to good teams, but they also haven't been competitive, certainly in the last two games. They got blown out at home by Green Bay in the 2010 playoffs. They put up very little or no fight against the Giants last year on the road. So there's certainly reason to not have a lot of faith in Atlanta and to say, okay, prove it to me, especially when you do, you know, have a great season in the regular season. You go 14-2 or 13-3, whatever it is. That's not enough to sway people at this point in time, and I think that's justifiable.
What about the situation now with them this weekend against a red-hot Seattle team? Do the Falcons match up better with Seattle or vice versa?
Well, I think this is a really intriguing matchup. And I give Atlanta a certain edge because I think that their wide receivers are strong enough to handle the combination of Browner and Sherman at the cornerback position. I mean, you're talking about Roddy White. He's probably one of the strongest wide receivers out there, a former high school wrestling champion, a guy who's got great strength. Julio Jones, who is not a small man by any stretch of the imagination. If any pair of wide receivers in the league are capable of handling the tough coverage that you're going to find, particularly from Browner, it is this pair in terms of White and Jones. And I think that if they can get a couple of explosive plays here, that'll be a huge factor. And whether they can keep the Seattle offense under control. And I think that when the Falcons play against a run-based team, they usually fare a little bit better. The teams that they have the bigger problem with are teams that can throw successfully against their kind of, I don't know, weak secondary. I mean, you know, I know Asante Samuel and Dante Robinson are pretty good players, but they can be had in certain situations.
With Seattle, is this being done with smoke and mirrors, or is this a real legitimate team that could really make some noise if they get past this weekend?
Oh, they're totally legit. I mean, Yeah, Russell Wilson, for a rookie quarterback to come as far as he has come so fast. And the one thing I have noticed about him more than anything else is that when something has to be fixed or he has to change something in his game, very few human beings do it faster at this level than Russell Wilson. And that's an amazing characteristic. Early in the season, I didn't think he did a good job of keeping his eyes downfield to watch what was going on in the secondary when he got flushed out of the pocket and you know, got some pressure. Within 3 weeks, 4 weeks, he was fixing that problem completely, where you see a guy who was, you know, definitely keeping his eyes transfixed downfield. That's why he hit some big plays in that game against the New England Patriots, that big victory that they had earlier in the season. I think that that's just that that confidence continues to mushroom for him as his, you know, you see it in the, statistically in his yards per attempt average, which has gone from in the mid-fives in the first month of the season to over 9 in the last month of the season. That's an amazing, amazing increase. So they're legit with the quarterback. They're legit certainly with the running back. The defense is completely legit. The one question mark I have for them is, you know, the health of Clemens and how he's going to hold up and how they're going to deal with him not being there. That, to me, becomes the real issue for them as they go forward, and whether they're going to be able to cross the country in back-to-back weeks and be ready physically. I mean, if I was them, I almost would have packed for 2 weeks and stayed on the East Coast to avoid this, but I do understand them going home, too.
You have Jason Cole right now with, from Yahoo Sports on the air with Real Sports Talk Radio. I'm Randy Zellia and Jose Padilla. Jason, if we would have told you at the beginning of the season, last note on Seattle, that Seattle would be in the position they're in after signing Matt Flynn to that huge contract, the situation with Terrell Owens, suspensions from early in the year with some of their players, we would have told you that they were going into this game against Atlanta and sort of like the underdog favorite at this point. Would you believe him?
Oh, no, no. She told me way back. I didn't see any of this coming. I thought their defense was good. I didn't think it was this good. I thought that Matt Flynn would be their starter. I didn't believe in Russell Wilson at all. You know, I'm on record with that. But, hey, I'm wrong, and it's actually a pretty cool thing to watch. So sometimes you just don't mind being wrong at all.
You're in San Francisco right now for the Green Bay game, for San Francisco Green Bay. If you have to finish this sentence for me, for San Francisco to win this game, they have to do?
Well, they have to put a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers with their four-man front. And Justin Smith better be very healthy to create opportunities for Aldon Smith. And they're going to also have to mix up their coverages and show him some things that confuse him a little bit, because look, Green Bay is not going to be able to run a lot in this game. They'll probably run for show at best with DeJuan Harris, you know, try and trick them a little bit. They're going to have to win this game with the throwing of Aaron Rodgers, and certainly he's capable of doing that. I mean, anybody who's watched Aaron Rodgers over the last 2+ years, you know, seen probably the maturing of the best quarterback in the NFL by quite a standard. Quite a length between the rest of the field, and the rest of the field is really good with guys like Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and all those guys that we talk about. But I think Aaron Rodgers is a clear step ahead of all those guys. So I would not be surprised in the least bit if he goes in there and if San Francisco doesn't do things to kind of slow him down and confuse him, that he has a huge game tomorrow and lifts them over the 49ers. The other thing the 49ers are going to have to do, they're going to have to get into the 20s in terms of points scored. So there's some pressure in my mind on Colin Kaepernick to make, you know, probably at least 2 or 3, maybe 4 big plays in this game to give the 49ers enough of an offensive lift to hopefully hold, you know, and combine with a defense that can hold Green Bay in check. You're never going to stop Green Bay, but you can if you can hold them in check, you have a chance in this game.
You know, John Harbaugh has made some interesting decisions throughout the whole year. Obviously, the biggest one was the switching of Smith for Kaepernick. But is he his own worst enemy when it comes to these sort of games? Or is he really more an invitation coach when it comes to these kind of things?
Well, I mean, look, you know, with Jim Harbaugh, I think we've only seen the 1 year at this level. You know, dating back to his days at Stanford, there were a couple of games where he might have clutched up a little bit. I know there was a Cal game that they lost where they had Tubby Gerhart and Andrew Luck, and yeah, he threw at the end of the game with Andrew Luck instead of running it with Tubby Gerhart. I said I didn't like that call given the situation and how Stanford was wearing Cal down in that situation with Gerhart. Maybe shouldn't have thrown in that situation, but I don't think that there's enough, you know, sort of sample size here to say one way or the other what is Jim Harbaugh yet at the NFL level. I think that his decision on Smith and Kaepernick, you know, it makes complete sense to me, because when I watched those two guys perform, to me it was clear that Kaepernick was the better player. And in this era, you need to have a great quarterback in order to win. I mean, if you look at the last 9 years, what quarterbacks have won the Super Bowl? I mean, six different quarterbacks have won the last 9 Super Bowls. That's 2 for Ben Roethlisberger. It's 2 for Eli Manning. It's 2 for Tom Brady. It's 1 each for Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. I mean, if you don't have a trigger man of that ilk, and Alex Smith, I'm sorry to say, is not of that ilk. If you don't have a guy of that ilk, and maybe Colin Kaepernick is that guy, he has the talent, you're simply not going to win at this level.
You know, it's funny you brought up Peyton Manning. That was my next question with his game against the Ravens, the Broncos Ravens. It seems like Peyton's regular season numbers are outstanding, obviously regular season MVPs. His playoff numbers have seemed to be less than stellar. Do you see a possibility of reverting back to Colts playoffs Peyton Manning, or do you think this is a whole type of different situation that he's in now with Denver?
Well, I hear that from people, and I understand. He's 9-10 in the playoffs, and particularly when the weather's been bad. I think in the 3 games that he's played where the temperature's been below 40, he had 7 interceptions. But some of that I kind of discount as well by saying, you know, a couple of those games are against some New England teams that went on and won Super Bowls, some pretty great teams. He hasn't always been perfect, but for a guy who's been to the playoffs, this is his 15th season, he's been in the playoffs 13 times in 14 years. I don't know a single franchise that wouldn't make that trade-off, if they had that pretty much guaranteed. Is some of this because he plays a dink-and-dunk kind of offense and traditionally has over his career that's not as explosive, and that gets exposed a little bit against better defenses, sort of like how Greg Maddux used to be when he was pitching for the Atlanta Braves and he would get into the postseason and all of a sudden he became a lot more hittable? Yeah, I think there's some parallels there. But all things considered, if I have to go to war with Peyton Manning as my quarterback, I'm cool.
I agree with that.
Well, Jason, now, give me a reason, any reason, why I should even bother watching New England versus Houston this weekend.
Because this game is going to be a whole lot closer than people think.
Really?
Yeah, I've read. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I think New England's going to win it by 10 to 14 points. But if you're expecting 42-14 again, you're going to be drastically surprised, in my mind, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, when you get into the playoffs, all those defensive holding calls and pass interference calls that get called during the regular season, and my prime example of it is the Daniel Manning call in the first Houston-New England game, where Wes Welker basically ran into Daniel Manning and they called Daniel Manning for pass interference. That call doesn't get made in the postseason. And I know it was one call in a 42-14 game, but it did help us set up another touchdown, and it set up, you know, more of that avalanche of points that the Patriots put up early that took Houston out of its game, didn't allow them to keep running the ball. So that doesn't happen. The other thing that happens is you get to bump their receivers a lot more because the refs don't want to make those calls. I think that Houston's going to do a little bit better job of holding up the Patriots receivers just enough that will allow, you know, J.J. Watt and Connor Barwin to get some hits, maybe get a sack or two against Tom Brady, make him feel a little bit less comfortable. All of that said, I think it makes it a closer game. So if we're talking about maybe, you know, 31-17 or 31-20, it's not a blowout like the last time. At least that's how I see this one happening. And if Matt Schaub can show up and be the quarterback that a championship team needs to have. And again, I don't think he's that kind of quarterback that I referred to earlier. But if he can show up and make three or four plays, this game gets a little bit more interesting. I mean, a lot of people, you know, talk like this one's going to be a blowout. It's the same kind of thing that happened in 2010 when, if you remember, the Patriots blew out the New York Jets 45-3. Everybody remembers that game. You know, it was a night game, and everybody laughed at the Jets and gave them no chance, and they came back in the playoffs, and guess what? The Jets beat them in New England because they were able to confuse Tom Brady and kept the game more under control. So I don't expect a complete reversal, but I expect a much more competitive game than people saw the first time.
Jason, a few more questions for you, and then we're going to let you go. We know it's Friday, and you're out in San Francisco. We're out here in the New York area. Oh, yeah, San Francisco's great. There's some great food out there. I want you to make sure you take advantage of that.
I'm going to be fine tonight. Don't worry about that.
Okay, excellent, then. We're out here in the New York area, and before we hit the circus, which is the New York Jets, I want to really quickly get your opinion on what happened with the New York Giants this year. The defending champions never seemed like they really got on a roll this year like they did towards the end of last season. Was it more of a Super Bowl hangover, or were they just not one of the more talented teams?
Well, I thought that they were banged up in the secondary early in the season, and I thought that made it really difficult for them to kind of create any kind of consistent defense. The pass rush didn't really show up as a result of that, and they got exposed a lot. I mean, so injury was part of the problem early in the season. By the end of the season, I thought, you know, they were banged up on offense and not really playing well, and Eli went into a bit of a slump and a tailspin. So I think there was a confluence of things that happened to them that made them, you know, like, where they still finished 9-7, they're still, you know, right in the realm of about what they were a year ago. The difference with the Giants is that I think that they've learned that they can cruise through the regular season. As long as they get to the playoffs, they can turn it on in the playoffs. Well, sometimes I think you go into a little bit too much of a cruise control and don't play with a certain urgency. You let some games get away from you, along with the fact that sometimes, look, you're just banged up and you're not playing at your best. You know, they're still the best team in this league in terms of being built for postseason play, which is having enough coverage in the back end with a great four-man pass rush. They are fantastic at that. The only team that right now compares to them with a four-man pass rush is the San Francisco 49ers, in my mind. And they just, you know, they're the ones that are in the playoffs. That's why I give them a pretty good shot to win the Super Bowl if they can get by Green Bay tomorrow. So I wouldn't worry a lot if I was a Giants fan. I would just say Tom Coughlin and the management needs to find a way to get them to play with a certain amount more urgency during the regular season and make sure that they're healthy.
If you're Jerry Reese, do you bring back or would you give contract extensions to an injury plague, Amon Bradshaw, and an injury plague to Hakeem Nicks?
Well, I'm sorry, we're talking about, you said Hakeem Nicks, Amon Bradshaw, and who was the other one?
Those are the only two I mentioned, but you could even go with guys like Canty and some of these other guys who have been banged up all season. You know,
Nicks, you have, this is a wide receiver league. Don't fool yourself. This is definitely a wide receiver league. You have to have talented wide receivers to play in this league right now because it's a passing league. Amon Bradshaw, nice player. Running backs are running backs. There's a reason you took Wilson in the first round. Yeah, if Bradshaw comes back for the right price, okay. If he doesn't, it's been fun.
that's right. And then we have to go to the other team that happens to occupy space in that stadium, and that's
they occupy a lot of space, don't they? They occupy a lot of space on the back pages.
Oh yeah. Well, I have to ask the question of at this day on. Does Rex Ryan deserve to have his job?
I like Rex. I really do. That's not exactly a vote of confidence, I guess, on my point. I would say if you were going to start over with a brand new GM and give the GM any kind of power, the answer would be it would be up to the GM to see what he wanted to work with giving him full latitude to fire Rex Ryan if he's so pleased and to sort of wipe the whole slate clean. And I would leave that on the GM, and I would not get it in the way of him in any way, shape, or form. and that would give him more power, certainly, over Rex. What the Jets have erected, so to speak, in this offseason, the way they have conducted the search, smacks to me of a team that is giving Rex too much power and too much clout and is making the GM position far too secondary, and that's dangerous to me. I mean, I don't have a problem bringing Rex back because I think he's a very competent coach and you have a chance to put this back together, but I have problems giving Rex more power in the structure that you're creating. That, to me, does not make any sense.
And I guess the next question that goes with that is, when next season starts, who's going to be the starting quarterback and who would you
oh,
like
please.
To see there?
Oh, please, please. Please, you guys aren't paying me anything, which is certainly not enough for me to make that kind of a prediction, okay, about what's going to happen to the Jets quarterback situation, okay? So I have no idea. In all likelihood, it's Sanchez. That's the safest bet. But, you know, it's going to be chaos this offseason. You know, one way or the other, it's going to be a chaotic situation where you're going to have to figure out you know, who's the leader of this team on offense? You know, are you going to give Sanchez one more chance? And are you going to help him out by surrounding him with a bunch of weapons that allow you to play aggressive? Or are you just kind of muddle along with the ground and pound semi-philosophy that Rex throws out there?
Jason, my last question for you, and then we're going to let you go. You've been covering the NFL for a long time. You've been to a lot of stadiums. We just asked one of our baseball guests same question. You've been in these media rooms. Who's got the best media? Who's got the best food in the media rooms across the league?
The best media room in the league? Wow. Best press box is probably Pittsburgh because they've kept it on the sideline. And, you know, you get the best view. You get the best view, and you get the best chance to look at what's really going on the field. And it's still relatively close. I mean, there's still some respect for the media in Pittsburgh generally, where they, you know, they take care of the media there and give them their due respect. So I would go with Pittsburgh. I'm trying to think of, you know, other places have great press rooms, but and they'll have, you know, they'll give you free food, but. Yeah, I would say if I want to watch the game, the place I would probably pick to watch a game would be in Pittsburgh.
And the best food in the league?
The best food?
Yeah.
Oh, New England has fantastic clam chowder, and like nothing beats, especially like after November 1st. Nothing beats going to Foxborough and having a couple of bowls of clam chowder before a game. That's really awesome. So there you go.
I'll tell you, because I cover the NBA a lot, and going into the NBA media rooms, it's like no matter what, if you don't like the food, they'll always have hot dogs. And that's the one.
Yes, they will. That's your bottom of the barrel, but, you know, at least they have something for you.
Jason Cole from Yahoo Sports, thank you for taking some time with us tonight. Appreciate it. Enjoy the games, and we'll definitely talk to you soon.
No problem. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was quite fun.
I feel so educated right now. Like, you know, it's funny. Okay, we do the show every week, whether it's on Sunday or we do it on Friday. And we're lucky because we get this forum, we get to say our opinions, I get to yell at you, I can say you're wrong, you get to tell me I'm wrong, and then we move on, and that's fine. Like, but when I love having the guys cover the games and cover the leagues more than I actually like having some of the players on, because, you know, these guys have been knowledgeable, they've been covering the games longer than some of the guys that we talk to have been in their respective leagues. So, you know, like, a guy like Jason is great because he broke everything down. Like, and I love the question you asked, like, is it even worth watching? And he's like, yeah, of course. And I was a little surprised you even went that route, but I'm sort of glad you did because we got such a really good explanation of it. So I thought he was great, and I really enjoyed having Jason on with us today.
Well, it's definitely quite fun, you know. I actually did enjoy it. Usually when you have these guys on, you know, I'm always worried, but so far I think we've been 2 for 2 so far with tonight's guests.
I think we're going to go 3 for 3, too, and I'm not worried about it. But I will tell you, we have Charles Curtis coming on in about 10 minutes to talk NHL and the New York Rangers hockey. It's interesting, too, and I'm not even talking about the food and which food has got the best media section in the NFL. I figured I'd have a little bit of fun. But what I found very interesting is when it comes to this, like, I think, you know, we listen to New York sports radio around here since we're in the New York metropolitan area. And what he broke down about Rex Ryan and the infrastructure of the Jets in the 2 minutes he did, I got more out of what he said than I did from listening to either of the two stations up here in the New York area.
And you know why? I think because it just goes to show you that there's too much of a bias in this area, like one way or the other. So you don't get a real good perspective, you know, on any of the teams here because, you know, if you listen to WFAN, you know, you know there's some issues there when it comes to the Jets. You know, there is a little bit of a bashing, if you will, basically because they're just on ESPN. So they don't get really treated well there. Also, the Jets don't send them anyone either, so it's kind of a catch-22, you know.
I agree with that.
So I think everything gets skewered, you know, it gets completely skewered. Remember, the Giants won a Super Bowl in 2007, and all we heard on ESPN from 2008 to 2011 was how the Jets were getting there. And they're like, you know, how could you as a Giant fan keep pushing the fact that you won that Super Bowl when the Jets had been to 2 AFC title games recently? And then the Giants won another Super Bowl, and that talk kind of stopped. And then the Jets all of a sudden kind of just turned to crap. But it just goes to show you when you have a dog in the show, no matter what's going on, you're always going to be skewered to that point of view, you know, no matter what. So we don't get that objective, intelligent opinion in this area. So it was definitely refreshing to hear because you're right, he summed it up in 2 minutes, and it was just great. I also love the fact that he would not go on record on who would be the Jets quarterback. He just shunned you there.
I have every right to be shunned there because it's not for nothing. It's not as easy as we all think. You know, usually if you're in the NFL, you can be like, you know what, we'll just cut him. We'll just cut this player and we'll find someone else. Like, I don't think the Jets have their quarterback that they're going to be successful with. That quarterback's on their roster right now. And just another quick note, and we didn't get to talk about this with Jason Cole, and you know, we went the whole time without using the word Tebow. That was the most amazing part to me. With all that being said, the one thing we haven't commented on is the fact that the new Jacksonville GM came out and basically said, you know, we have no interest in Tebow. Well, one of the reasons why he said that is obviously he's not going to get into any type of tampering charge because right now Tebow's still under contract with the New York Jets until the day after the Super Bowl.
Is true. But I think he probably just wants to nip that in the bud. I don't, you know, I like Tebow, but I think it's safe to say that if Tebow's playing football next year, it will not be in the NFL. He'll probably go to Canada, you know, refine his skill, you know, get on with a team there that would actually like to use him. And, you know, maybe he can, you know, improve, you know, because I think that's been the one issue. He's never had any consistency playing. So, you know, I don't know how you expect someone to improve and get better when they don't even get a chance to play.
Okay, well, I'm gonna play devil's advocate with you on this. And this is a great argument, too. You just say he's going to end up going to Canada or play somewhere else. Why are we discounting? You can't really take a word of what the Jets officials saw, because look what's going on with them. Is that fair? Is that fair to go with that? I don't think it is. I think you have to look at Tebow's full body of work and what he did in Denver. Because what he did in Denver, you know, if you would have won 2 or 3 games, that's one thing. But he took his team to the playoffs, and he won a game. He won a playoff game against the Steelers. The Jets totally misused him. They lowered his value. He didn't even really get to see on the court, well, you know, what he was able to really do. You know, why are we killing him? You know, why are we killing Tebow? You can't.
I'm going to tell you why. And again, I've been one of his more like objective supporters. I think people don't want to deal with him no more. I really honestly feel if you have no intention of going all in with Tebow, there's no point in bringing him in because the distraction is too much. And if he's not starting for you, it just becomes overbearing. And it's a shame because this is one of the, you know, from everything you see, this is one of the most genuine people, regardless of what Merle Hodge will have you believe, out there.
You listen to Merle Hodge way too much, but
you know what? I wonder why he has a job. I mean, because when Tebow's not in the league next year, what are they going to do with him in ESPN? Just personally, because that's really, it seems that that's the only thing he's on for in ESPN is to take shots at Tebow and then every now and then come up with some analysis that is off base or completely not on point. And other than him bashing on Tebow, I mean, I don't know what else he does. So, I'm curious if he'll be on ESPN next year because he's going to have nothing to talk about.
By the way, you know Rob Parker got booted, right? That
whole
situation with ESPN.
Yeah, well, let me just say this. ESPN is showing once again that if you make money for them, you can say whatever you want, Stephen A. Smith. I'm just saying.
Well,
hate don't lie. That's the hashtag.
That's real quick before we jump into hockey, I want to run down.
Oh, wait, Randy, real fast. You got to let me get in on this NCAA game this past Monday because I don't know if we'll have time to do that towards the end.
We,
so you got to give me a couple minutes to talk.
Can we do that on sound off?
I don't know if I have enough time for that, but all right, I'll behave.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Really quickly, just going to run down the NBA scores and any quick NBA news. It doesn't look like we're really going to get to it tonight. There's not a lot of news in the NBA right now besides the Carmelo Kevin Garnett thing. We'll hit on that before the night's over because we're not going to be able to do too much with hockey, and I apologize for all our hockey fans. But really quickly, go over the scoreboard. Right now in the fourth quarter, 8:52 remaining. Toronto over Charlotte, 81-62. The Boston Celtics look like they're bouncing back. They'd be on their way to winning their fifth in a row, 62-47 against Houston in the third quarter. The Brooklyn Nets trailing the Phoenix Suns, 55-48. The Nets seem to be hit with the flu bug, and Nets' Charles Wallace left this game with an injury. I'll get you some more information on that in a few minutes. The Utah Jazz ahead of the Atlanta Hawks, 65-53, 5:41 left in the third. Jose, it looks like the Hawks are finally evening out a little bit. They lose tonight to their fifth in a row. The Chicago Bulls right now on ESPN leading the New York Knicks 46-24. The Memphis it's not pretty at all, and it's the way Chicago's doing it. They're dismantling the Knicks. In my opinion, the game of the night, if you would have asked me to pick one game tonight, that would be the game of the night. And it's not even the Thunder and the Lakers. I'd probably tell you it would be the Grizzlies and the Spurs. And San Antonio has a 3-point lead with 3:45 left in the second, 39-36. Minnesota's having some real bad luck, man. Like, Kevin Love is out again. They have a 46-35 lead against the New Orleans Hornets with a 1:19 left in the second. The Detroit Pistons have a 1-point lead over the Milwaukee Bucks with just at the end of the first quarter here. It's 22-19 with 2:10 remaining in the first. You have the Cavaliers at Denver at 9 p.m. tonight. Do you remember there was a time in 2003 where Cleveland and Denver had the first and third picks in the draft, and they had LeBron with Carmelo? Yeah, that game's going to be a lot of fun tonight. Cleveland and Denver tonight at 9 p.m. Oklahoma City and the Lakers are the late game on ESPN at 10:30. And tonight on Golden State, the surprising Golden State Warriors host the Portland Trail Blazers. Just some quick NBA headlines. John Wall will be making his debut this season on Saturday. Greg Oden is getting a tryout with the Miami Heat. I don't know how much of a really big deal this is because I don't know if he gets signed, if he can help the Miami Heat in the situation that they need.
Greg Oden was such a great talent, and it's a shame that injuries have really robbed him of anything. You know, the guy was a phenomenal player. It's a shame, really.
I agree with you. It's one of those things where injuries, like, and the thing is, he came into the league at 19, and he looked like he was 50. So it was, like...
You know, it's funny that you say that, because that does lead credence to the fact that, you know, how old is this guy really? Like, I mean, look how badly injured he's been. I mean, so, all kidding aside, I mean, it's a shame, but it does lead some credence to it, that there's something definitely wrong to
him. Well, we're gonna switch over to the NHL right now. We're going to welcome Charles Curtis. Charles, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Good to be with you guys.
You're a blogger for the New York Rangers for NJ.com, and you also contribute to ESPN Playbook. We're excited to have you on tonight. You know,
happy to be with you guys.
Thank you. And I got to ask, first, you know, for hockey fans, it feels like it's Christmas because their season finally starts. Can you give us more of a breakdown of basically what changes were made to the CBA at this point?
Right. Well, first, I think that the biggest thing for everybody was the hockey-related revenue going down to 50-50 split for owners and for players, and that was kind of the biggest thing that started out this whole process. And it's a hit for the players who got 57% in the previous CBA, and in exchange for that, that's kind of what the battleground ended up being. And basically, it ended up with a 10-year deal, which is good for the owners, given that there could be some changes in revenue in the next few years, or the next at least 5 years. At least they get this cut of a deal down the road for a longer period of time. Though there is an 8-year. One of the sides can call it and cancel it. And I think the biggest thing for players is even though they won't get to sign those amazing, wonderful 13, 14-year contracts, they'll at least get 7 years to sign and 8 if they're staying with their own team, which is kind of a win because there was talk of 5-year limits from the owners. They get a better salary cap in 2013-14 season, and that's kind of a huge thing as well. I thought that was kind of one of the biggest things because it allows for teams to really work around the changes that are going to happen next year. There was that whole thing about pensions that's been fixed. And the kind of interesting thing that gets rid of all these kind of cap busting deals is the 35% variance. So I don't quite have the language correctly, but the contract can't vary year to year, I think, by 35%. It's something to that effect.
What teams are going to benefit from this new CBA right off the bat?
There was also what I didn't mention is, you know, a lot more revenue sharing. I think that some of the teams that were struggling, which was kind of a big spotlight on this disagreement, was dealing with teams that are losing money, the types like the Coyotes, for example, or maybe even like the Blue Jackets, you know, teams that are hemorrhaging money. Those are the kinds of teams that might benefit from getting a little bit more revenue in there, having maybe a smaller cap. And I think there was, differences in cap floors. That'll help. I think those are the things that they're hoping will benefit, and at least in my eyes, it could happen. And obviously, we'll have to see how much revenue is coming in after such a lockout that will definitely make changes to how many fans come to games.
Yeah, well, as we all know, though, hockey's that sport where, like, you're either hardcore into it or you barely know what's going on. So I don't personally think there'll be any issues with the fans coming back. But in the long term, what is hockey's goal? I mean, we know they have the NHL Network, but if they're not – basically, if they don't get any coverage on ESPN in this area, it's like it doesn't exist. Is that ever going to be something that they get back into, or are they just sticking with what they got right now with NBC?
I mean, it seems to me that NBC is it for them. They signed a deal pretty recently that gives a lot of money to the league. And actually, there was some talk in there that if there was a full lockout, I think for the full year, I have to check and make sure I got this right, but they would give a year back free, and nobody wanted to do that. But with NBC, you know, making this, carving out their niche here, and it NHL was their big splash, I guess you'd say, is, you know, there wasn't much on the NBC Sports Network that people wanted to watch as far as large audiences. So I think that, you know, if they're the only game in town, then, you know, they'll keep building an audience on NBC, and maybe ESPN will come back if things keep growing like they were before the lockout, but that's kind of a question mark.
You know, Charles, I have to ask this question with this new CBA in place. Are we done seeing the, like, Kovalov type of contracts, these 20-year type of contracts? Are those days, like, done now?
I think what you're going to see, and this is sort of my own opinion, is you're going to see some contracts signed that to me feel like NBA contracts. And it's a little different in the NBA with their contracts. But, yeah, you'll get some cornerstone guys signed for 8 years. You're going to get sort of your central – I'm trying to think of a good example. Rick Nash comes off the top of my head, even though he wouldn't sign necessarily because he's a little bit older, this kind of contract. But you will get guys who are staying with their teams for a while, but you won't get necessarily a giant 14-year, 20-year contract that was kind of possible before that.
Talk to me. I know you're blog with the Rangers, but now the talk with the Devils have seen the Blues, a lot of their marquee players, are the defending Eastern Conference champions. Seems like they're going to be, you know, without key guys now, and they sort of have to rebuild. Is this the end of the quote-unquote era of, like, the Lamoriello being successful type of hockey style here?
You can never count them out, and that's something I've discovered over the years of watching hockey and to an extent covering it, is that you can never count the Devils out. Lamoriello always has a move up his sleeve. And remember, they still have Ilya Kovalchuk coming back, even though there's some talk of that being a little strained after what's happened with the KHL. They still have Mark Tamberg-Durin. Yes, he's way past the age. Theoretically, he should be performing this way. But, yes, they lost Parisi, and that's going to be a problem, definitely. I just always feel that there's always somebody coming up in their ranks. They do have a few young players in the system that could step up. They'll probably take a hit this year, but it wouldn't surprise me to see in such a shortened season that, you know, when goalies are going to rule the roost, it's you're going to see maybe they'll make the eighth seed or the seventh seed. I don't see them winning the Atlantic. I don't see them doing much more than that. It's you know, barely competing for the eighth spot is sort of, I think, their ceiling at the moment. But you never know. That's the kind of strange thing about the lockout is some team can catch fire and figure it out quickly.
Well, Charles, now that we got the Devils out the way, and I do respect them, but let's talk about the major league team that's in this area, and that's the New York Rangers. What are you expecting from them this year after what happened last year?
I expect big things. At least, I think the expectations for them are high in general, and for somebody writing about them coming out, I don't want to jinx it for any fans out there, but I do think that they have their eyes on the Cup Finals. They fell short last year. I spoke with some players on Tuesday. Dan Girardi, I think, told me that they looked at what they did last year against the Devils, and they knew that there were certain things that they learned from that. And so it's another year. It's another year under John Tortorella. They know his system. They have a young core that's surrounded by some veterans and some, I guess, what you call Tortorella-type guys who will work hard. And the shortened season will help that because they'll have their core intact. And they have the best goaltender in the NHL currently, and all of that will at least propel them, expectations-wise, to an Eastern Conference win, if not the Cup itself.
Okay, Charles, I think we have a caller on the line who wants to ask you a question. Caller, if you're ready, go ahead. Have at it.
Yeah, I wanted to know what you think of Dmitry Fish coming up on the Penguins. I think he's going to be real great. What do you think?
I missed it. Who is the name on the Penguins? Yeah, I don't know a lot about him. I'll tell you this much about the Penguins, though, is that that's the team that the Rangers may have to hurdle over, and they'll learn what they're all about. Reportedly, this next Sunday, it'll be the home opener for the Penguins and Rangers. Evgeny Malkin is obviously a star, and Sidney Crosby is hopefully healthy, and Marc-Andre Fleury is another year older, and they are a team to watch out for, and certainly, it's going to be a tough road for the Rangers if they have to go through the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sorry, I didn't catch who you might be talking about there, but I'll have to study up as the season begins.
Yeah, we all got to brush up real fast. Wade Redden, is he in the plans, or as I've been hearing, are they just going to let him sit at home this year so they'll be able to let him go next year in an amnesty sort of release?
The reports are that they're going to have him stay home, that he's a contract that they are definitely going to buy out at some point, and that some point will be this summer, and it's the right move, I think. Wade probably doesn't want to play in the AHL for another season. If his contract counts against the cap, which it will, then why bother? He's going to make a lot of money sitting this season, and I think it's best for both parties if he gets bought out, and maybe he gets a chance next year. You know, he's not the worst defenseman. It's the problem is his contract's too prohibitive, and so down the road you're going to have to see if he finds himself with another team. It's probably the right move for the Rangers. I don't see him. Somebody asked the other day, I thought I saw on Twitter, you know, will Wade Redden get a chance with the team? And the answer is no. I just don't, especially in this small season. Shortened season, that he wouldn't get a chance.
What would you expect out of Chris Kreider after a somewhat up and down playoff performance, but considering that he just got done with NCAA, I would consider a promising one.
I agree. I see promise, and he's young. That's what kind of fans have to remember about him is his ceiling is really high, but he's still a young guy, and he's only had, what, about 16 or so games of pro experience, and they were in the playoffs, which can sometimes be different hockey. I think the expectation is that Chris Kreider will, at the very least, be on the second line or the third line, and they expect to see him use his speed and his hockey smarts to get where he's supposed to be some point. If he struggles this season, it wouldn't be surprising to me just a little bit at getting acclimated to the game. He did struggle a little bit down in the AHL this season while he was waiting out the lockout. There was a stretch of games where he didn't score, but he is sort of getting ready for the season. And he might actually be better with the NHL because he played with the team last year.
Any other young Rangers down in the pipelines maybe that, you know, maybe the casual Rangers fan may not be aware of, or even maybe the hardcore Rangers fan may not be aware of that could help along the way this year, considering that it is a short season?
There are a couple of guys that come off the top of my head. I think casual fans might know both of them. JT Miller was somebody I watched some hockey during the lockout. He played for the U.S. Juniors team that won gold in Russia this a few weeks ago, and he is the prototypical John Tortorella player. He's in the corners. He's in front of the net. He's doing dirty work. He's in scrums after the whistle. He's the kind of guy that will get the look if there's an injury or maybe disappointment in camp early on. The plan, I believe, is for him to be in the AHL for a lot of the season. It's his first year in the AHL, obviously, and he's a guy that I think the Rangers are very high on. He's a first-round pick as well, and he's exactly what this team is all about, gritty, scoring the goals in front of the net. He's not necessarily like a finesse player, but he's still got some conditioning. And Brady Shea, who was their first-round pick last year, the defenseman, he almost made the juniors team, but he will still be in college. He's a guy you have to look for down the road, especially with this young defensive core that the Rangers have already. He's the kind of defenseman that can fit right in a couple of years, especially when you have guys like Ryan McDonough and Mark Stahl and those types of players. He'll fit right in as a perhaps a two-way defenseman.
Okay, I think we have another caller online. Caller, how about it with Charles?
Hi, this is Dave. I like this guy.
Hi,
Yarmar
Dave.
Pedved. What do you think of him? Yarmar Pedved. Hello?
Hello, I'm sorry. I didn't catch that. I'm sorry. Did you say Pedved? I don't even know if that's – I got to check up on this here. Ask me another question. How about that? Hello?
I think we lost him. I'm not actually sure who he was referring to. Part of me,
yeah, I don't
to
think
say
Isaiah,
that
maybe
a,
you might be getting a prank caller or two here.
Yeah, you know, prank caller is someone calling about an NHL 13 player that probably doesn't exist. I'm not really sure about that. I've never heard the name. I'm like, where have I heard that name before? Probably would have helped if he gave us the organization.
Yeah, really. Any other questions for me? I'm all ears.
Well, let's, as far as I can say, I don't have any other calls right now, but we do, though. I'm sure Randy will let me know. Getting to Lundqvist, we obviously know he's great talent, resident trophy winner. I'm thinking that being that it is a short season, it will actually benefit him because I think the knock on him has always been whether he can handle the full load that, you know, a star goalie of his caliber would handle. Do you think that the short season will benefit him or will it be a hindrance?
I think it will benefit him completely. In past seasons, before the last one at least, there was some questions about that very problem, and they brought in Marty Baron to deal with that. But in a shortened season, if he plays, let's say, 40 of the 48 or, you know, 38, he'll be more than ready for the playoffs. He's used to carrying an 82-game load. And remember, he didn't play at all during the lockout. He didn't play in his native Sweden. So he's easily going to play over 40 games, I think, and head into the playoffs feeling fresh, probably even in game shape. I think it's a perfect setup for the coming season.
Hey, Charles,
sorry, Randy.
I said, Charles, you know, besides also covering hockey, you know, if you go to Charles' website, and there's a link to it through his work through NJ.com, you see him get into chat with Chad Ochocinco. So, you know, Charles has done a lot of different work in the media as well, working with ESPN Playbook. But we'll get back to hockey in 1 second. But, Charles, I have to ask this question, especially since you worked with Chad Ochocinco, and I don't know if you got to see him on with Skip and Stephen a couple weeks ago on First Take. Do you think, because we have this perception of professional athletes, both, you know, hockey, basketball, football, baseball, we put these guys in a certain light, and they give us this perception of themselves. Should we be covering them just for what they're doing on the floor and or ice or field and not for their off-season activities? Or should we just be or should we just focus on whatever part of the news that they like get in, both on and off the field? I'm asking you just as a media member. So this was a question that just got emailed over to me. So
I think that the with Chad Ochocinco and other people have had sort of off-field incidents, I think that it comes with the territory, unfortunately. I think it's hard, this, especially in this 24/7 media, 24/7, 365 media, you get so many people who are these great athletes on the field, and then they get into domestic disputes and criminal activity and DUIs, and unfortunately it's going to get covered, and athletes need to be careful. And do I think it's fair? It's hard to say that it doesn't come with the territory, like I said. But think about Ray Lewis, who just retired. You know, there are a lot of people saying, you know, one of the greatest linebackers of all time, and I would agree. But then there is a whole party of people saying he went through a trial, and you know, there was a possibility that he did a crime. And so you've got to think about both of those things as far as athleticism goes. You can't divorce those two things from each other. That's my feeling, is that it's unfortunate because, you know, young people say they're role models, and while I don't sometimes think that's as fair as it should be, it's what it has to be in the 21st century.
I can't agree with you more. My last NHL question, and then, you know, if Jose has anything else for you. My last NHL question is, do you think it's going to be easier to get their fan base back in time for the playoffs this upcoming, or I'm sorry, let me rephrase the question. How long will it take it to get that fan base back to where it was last year? Because I do remember the playoff series between Philly and Pittsburgh might have been one of the most exciting, even though it was only a 5 or 6-game series. I believe it was 5 games. It was one of the most exciting playoff series that I remember seeing because of all the scoring. And fans who are not normal hockey fans jumped in because they want to see the scoring and the fighting. I know the NHL doesn't want to promote fighting, but to get that type of buzz again, how long will it take to get that buzz back?
My feeling is, and I think Jose said this before, is that because it's become such a sport that caters to its hardcore fan base, I think that you're going to see the numbers down, at least for casual fans maybe coming to games. I would think that if they get another playoff run like they did last year, the NHL at least, with tons of great series, there were more than just Philly and the Penguins. I mean, you had the Rangers going to two different 7-game series. And I feel I would say maybe in 2 or 3 years, if they continue to have these exciting playoff series where fans might forgive them for missing almost half the season. I asked a question on NJ.com recently. I said, will you come back? And a lot of people said, I'm not buying a ticket for this year and next year because of this. And I think you might see that, but it might be a little more minor because the hardcore fans were hanging on every word written during the lockout. You know, people would write in and say, get it done already. I want to go see a game. So I think you might see, again, if there's a really good playoff series or 3 or 4 and a great cup finals, and the hardcore fans will be back, but I think they'll try to win over more casual fans back again. And mark my words, 3 or 4 years, you can call me in 3 years and we can rehash that.
Well, Charles, I have 2 more questions and then we'll let you go. One
sure.
On the hockey side, one on the fun side. On the hockey side, gut feeling, Stanley Cup champion finals, who is it?
That's the real question. I'm going to get a lot of Rangers fans telling me that I jinxed it, but I'll put the Rangers in the final from the East. And then I'll say I've been thinking a lot about either the Canucks or the Blues, and I guess I'll go with the Blues. Just I'm looking for a team that'll make a quick run that has great goaltending that is deep. And the Blues showed me something last year, not in the postseason, but during the season I thought, now there's a team that is sort of doing what the Rangers are doing, building slowly and with good goaltending and growing it together, which is the way you have to do it in the NHL's salary cap era. So I'll put it down here. It'll be Rangers-Blues in the final.
Okay. Now, for the fun question, probably actually not fun, but I'm sure you've been around to all the different arenas or as many as you can. Which place do you have the best food when you have to cover, you know, these teams? And as far as you're concerned, for your bottom dollar, who has the best food out there?
Oh, that's a really great question. You know, I've been in a few places and not enough to say that I could have tried everything everywhere. But I'm going to surprise you guys. Kansas City is incredible. The barbecue there is you literally go knowing full well that the barbecue there is exactly what you go to Kansas City for. It's exactly what it's known for. So you land. You wake up the next day, you do it for lunch, you really hope that it carries you over to dinner, and, you know, it usually does, for me at least.
I'm telling you, that's why Andy Reid is coaching the Chiefs right now.
Oh, it makes complete sense to me. You look at him, and you wonder why he chose that city. That is a joke I've heard quite a few times, definitely.
Not original? Oh, no. Charles, listen,
no.
It was great having you. Great hockey talk. You know, I'm sure every fan is looking forward to it. Much success to you, and we definitely hope to hear from you soon.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. I'll be on anytime you want. Enjoy the NHL season.
Thanks, Charles.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
buddy.
Bye.
I have to say, Randy, this has been one of my favorite shows.
3 for 3. I think this would have been a lot of fun. You know, we're going to forego thumbs up, thumbs down this week. I think we have to, because right now we're down to the final couple minutes. Just want to react to a couple things he said. I'm sorry if we jumped off the hockey for a second to talk about that media question, but it was something that was emailed to me, so I thought it was appropriate to bring it up. I think he's right. I think right now the perception is we seem to forget about how great how some of these players are on the field, on the court, on the ice. We get away from it because we're focusing
yeah.
on all the other junk. I think that if you know, as media members, we have to sometimes we're forced to cover those types of things, and I'm lucky because I'm not forced to cover anything. I can go where I want to with it, and that's why a lot of our headlines end up getting thrown to the back burner, because not everybody wants to hear the goody two shoes story in sport. They want to know they want to hear the TMZ style of sports stories, and so you know we're lucky to do what we get to do. We don't have to really follow any bylines. But yeah, you're right. This has been a great show, and he was excellent. Jason Cole was excellent. Andy McCullough was excellent as well. So we've been very lucky tonight to have some very, very good guests and have a good show. It's now time for Sound Off. Sound Off today brought to you by Upbeat Custom Creations. You can go to upbeatcustomcreations.net to get any all your promotional product needs. Upbeatcustomcreations.net and ask for Mike. They bring fame to your name. Jose, you're up first, bud.
I wanted to get into this whole debacle that happened on Monday, which was, of course, the BCS National Championship game. We have to, you know, we basically have to wait 40 days before the game actually goes on. And the hype coming into the game was basically Notre Dame was going to have a much better chance to win this game than people were letting on. The only problem was I never actually heard anyone really downgrade Notre Dame. In fact, I heard a lot of people think that Notre Dame could not only be competitive in this game, but they could actually win this game. Of course, the hardcore fan like me kind of felt Notre Dame didn't really deserve to be there. And the only reason why they were in the game was because they were undefeated, and oh, by the way, they're Notre Dame. Well, the game was played, and we all saw what happened. It was an absolute debacle. This is nothing against the Notre Dame team or the Notre Dame fan. The team went undefeated. They deserve to be there. Whether I agree with it or not, we got to follow the rules. My point is, we're so now just hammering away that certain teams are going to be good no matter what. Like, we have to watch out for these teams that we kind of missed the forest for the trees. My point is, we saw what happened with the SEC most of the bowl season. We saw that Florida got upset. We saw LSU got upset. So people are now saying, you know, maybe Alabama's not that good. I kept hearing people say, Alabama's schedule's not that great. It wasn't that good. Notre Dame is much better. Then we saw the game, and it turned into a massacre. I guess what I'm trying to say is, we need a new system. We're going to get a new system. I leave you with this thought and this ramblings of me pretty much bashing Notre Dame, not willingly, but just kind of just to prove a point. If Boise State was 12-0 with the exact same statistical advantages that Notre Dame had with an equal schedule of strength, would we have been clamoring for Boise State to be in the national championship game? Think about that the next time some big-name school goes undefeated. Well, Randy, that's all I had, basically. I just needed to get that all out.
My sound off is a little bit different, and I think that it's for what's been going on so far with the NBA this season. I think position can agree with me that the NBA season so far this year has been one of surprises. I think some teams have overachieved, some teams have underachieved, and some teams are just not as good as we originally thought they were going to. I will gladly eat crow, as I said that the Boston Celtics were going to be the best team in the Eastern Conference. And you said to me at one point that they're not, the Knicks were going to be a lot better than I was giving them credit for, and I'm an NBA guy. With all that being said, the one thing that we all sort of want when we go to an NBA game is competitive game and a full reminder of that we want to see the best competitive type of basketball and, you know, nothing too dirty. And I think the other night, on Monday night, when the New York Knicks played the Boston Celtics, we did not see the best of the sport of basketball with Kevin Garnett and Carmelo Anthony. As much as I am, over time, had been, not only say I'm a fan of the Celtics because I'm really not a huge fan or a follower of them, but I respect what they've done over the years as far as getting better, you know, as being a pedigree team in this league. Kevin Garnett, I think we can all agree, may not be a great human being, may not be a great guy. He's still a great basketball player, but his tactics are questionable. But do we applaud Carmelo Anthony for standing up to him and even going by the bus waiting for him so he can try and so-called work it out? I think these guys have to remind themselves of who's watching them and who's following their example. And once that thought gets into their head and stops thinking about the showboating, the glitz, the glamour, the NBA will probably be a lot more better place for the audience. That's all I got, Jose.
I feel you. Real fast, Randy, did David Stern drop the ball by not suspending Garnett?
No, because Garnett's not the one who went to the other team's locker room. Garnett's not the other one. Garnett didn't go by the Knicks team bus because they were home. But, you know, with Garnett, I think Garnett uses this as a ploy to get people to talk about it. You know, like to get people to get them riled up during the game. That's Garnett's goal. And he did. He took Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks out of their game, and they lost that game. Same thing with Reggie Miller used to do the same thing. Obviously, if you remember watching that Knicks Pacers special on ESPN, Reggie Miller took people out of their game, and that's what they did. So
yeah, but this went a little bit far and above what Reggie Miller even did.
Well, even Reggie Miller said, he said, if you would have known that John Starks' mom, what the Patrick Ewing says, do not ever touch my boy again, you know, he said he would have used that. So, you know, again, I'm not condoning what Garnett did, but these guys have to be smarter and understand that they have an audience and a fan base, and they have to be a little bit more mature. That's all we really got. And, you know, I think that's a wrap for us right now, Jose. Jose and I will be back at our regular time next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. 11 a.m., 11:30 a.m., around that point. And we'll be back with our usual crazy havoc. By the way, Jose, really quick, who do you pick for this weekend?
I'm going to take Seattle in an upset, San Francisco, New England, and Denver.
All right, well, I'm going to go, you're going to love this. I'm going to go Denver, San Francisco, Do you think I should be gutsy and choose Houston?
Why not?
All right. I'm gonna go with Seattle in an upset, and I'm gonna take New England. So that's where we're at. Otherwise, Jose, the show is over. You may go in peace, my friend.
Have a good day, bro.
Thanks, bud. Peace. We're out of here.
Take a deep.